Welcome to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. Today we will be chatting to Ali Price ahead of the big game at the weekend against France and also debriefing the game against Italy at the weekend.
So Rach, a good win for Scotland away from home, the opening game of the Open Nations Cup away in Italy. We both know how hard it is out there, but I thought a really combative first half, a really good second half. But for me, Italy were the story of the first half. I thought the way they came out, the way they played, it was a 28-17 points win for Scotland, obviously, but a real cracker of a test match.
Yeah, definitely. I thought, like you say, the first half, Italy looked like a different team from what we've seen recently, and they were so, so up for it, and defensively putting Scotland under a lot of pressure, but also kind of from a kicking point of view, putting Scotland back a lot when we did have that pressure on them. So it was a really tough first half, but I think what's really promising from a Scotland point of view is how they came out in the second half and kind of found that way to win and crack the Italy defence and get beyond and get those points. But no, it was a brilliant game and I thought both sides played really well.
Yeah, it was good to see it played in sunshine, to be honest. It was quite envious and roundabout. But you're right, I see Italy played really well in the first half. They did. I thought the defence was really physical. It was really fast off the line. And I thought we could have maybe held a little bit more depth at times just to try and retain possession. I also thought like a lot of the good things that we did, whether it was a half-line break or getting in behind, actually ended up being a real positive for Italy because they got a man over the top of the ball and then one penalties, one turnover. So we're a little bit slower to break down, I think, in the first half. And I think a combination of a bit more depth in the second half and also maybe their line speed just tiring, you know, the speed that they came off the line, you can't really do that for 80 minutes.
Yeah.
It allowed us back in. But from our, you know, I said before, we both know how hard it is to play in Italy. And I've been involved in games exactly like that was in the first 30 minutes and not being able to wrestle that momentum back. And as you say, Scotland getting the game back to how they wanted it was, and a victory was really impressive for me because they didn't panic. It was all quite calm. It wasn't, nothing changed at half time. They just were more accurate and I just had that belief in the, I suppose, intelligence to turn what was a really, you know, really tough situation into quite a convincing win in the end.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, like you say, in those situations where, you know, you've had a lot of pressure and you've not had many points from it, it's quite easy to fall away and you know, for Italy to go and take that game to Scotland rather than the other way around, especially away from home. So I think it's really impressive how we did control the game in that second half. And obviously Duncan Weir coming in for the first time in a long time and pulling the strings is also really, really promising to see. And almost came away with a try as well. Unfortunately not, but no, I thought it was a really good performance and a lot to take from it as well from Scotland point of view.
Four tries, bonus point win, third win away in a row, away from home in a row, which doesn't happen a huge amount. I can't remember when the last time it was, but it was a long, long time ago. Five wins in the bounce as well, and all quite different. So when you put all that in, and I say the bonus point win, the four tries, it was reasonably comfortable in the end. And you're right about Dunkey did really well, you're managing it. Sam Johnson at 12, a 10-12 access needs time together, and it was the first game for both of them together. And I thought Xander again stood up front. I thought Scott Cummins played well. Stuhan van der Merwe, undoubtedly man of the match. I mean, his presence. And I was doing a bit on Radio Scotland, and one of the best things for me about what he does, he gains you ground, he gains you time on the ball, even if he's retreating. So if he has to go back and pick up a loose ball or pick up a kick, you want that. You want either to beat the first defender, or get in behind, or even buy time if you do get stopped by the first defender. But his power, offensively as well as defensively, was brilliant, and it was just exactly what we need. So a deserved man of the match for Big Doohan, I think.
Yeah, definitely. I think, like you say, every time he got on the ball, he was creating something, whether it was meters or like catching a small break or whatever it was. And it was great to see him kind of build into obviously a second cap for Scotland and really starting to show what he's done for Edinburgh as well. So I thought he played brilliantly. I totally agree with Xander up front and Scott as well, really putting in a shift. I think Scott Cummins has probably been one of our most consistent players in the pack of recent games. He's turning into absolutely world-class player in terms of the second row. So yeah, it was brilliant to see. And like you say, Sam Johnson coming back in the centres is good to see as well from that kind of depth point of view there.
So Rach, we're now joined by Al. We obviously got a flyer, we've got a head start. Al's just come off a meeting. So we've just having a look at the game at the weekend and the positives in around individuals and the team performance and the fact that being up against it away from home in Italy is something we've both experienced, as well as Rachel and I were saying. So what were your thoughts on the performance?
Well, exactly that. Mostly we're watching it first half. It looked like a game. Like, I was really impressed with Italy, first and foremost.
Yeah,
controlled the game really well, tactically very clever, used the channels very well, you know, pinned Scotland back down the 5 metre channels on both sides. Like, the bit that stood out, the chip out of defence coming out of the red zone,
yeah, Scotland from the kickoff.
Yeah, got to come out hard, chipping over top, finding space, all things that, you know, showed how tactically aware they were. And
on that point, Al, before that, the first phase of play, once the ball got in after that first scrum, it was kind of long kick after long kick after long kick. And it was like about a 3 minute period of play. And then after they went ahead, you just assumed, I think, and Scotland maybe just assumed that they were going to go back into that long kicking game. And that's where they put the chip in. So it was really astute, you know, almost, yeah, I don't, well planned, well executed. And it allowed them to get on the front foot. Now, you would very rarely have seen an Italian team chipping from kickoff receipt, so they're well balanced.
Yeah, that's what struck me with it, especially the first half display, is that like Scotland couldn't, Italy controlled the game predominantly for the first 40 minutes, but in the past Italy would have kept doing the same thing even if it wasn't working. And that's how teams then put them under pressure and win the game, but they had the ability to change their game. But then the biggest, you said it there, for Scotland to turn that round, we've been out there before, and you lose a wee bit of control, and all of a sudden you're not playing the way, and people start making mistakes. But they controlled the game well. Scotland were balanced, they were patient. You know, they got a bonus point out of it. And yeah, I heard you speaking about Doohan. One thing that stands out for me on Doohan, a few other players as well, but at times you need somebody to change the momentum of a game. Like, you can sit back and look at a game after it's finished and you've lost it, and you try and work out why you've lost it, and you actually need that momentum shift. He can do that. He can do that with a break. He comes off his try. He came off his wing looking for the ball. It's a great try, great line. But he's got the ability to shift it, which then gives everybody else a lift around the boom.
That's true. And he's done that consistently for Edinburgh. And, you know, I suppose the question would be, would he be able to do it immediately in an international arena? Because not many players do. You know, it is of greater intensity, it is of less time on the ball, but he's just taken international rugby seamlessly. It's just almost exactly as he's been doing for 3 years, straight in an international environment, Rach, and pretty impressive.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, a number of those players he wouldn't have played with, and he looks like he's been in that team for years. And I think that shows a lot about him as a player and him as a character as well, and probably a little bit around kind of the squad as well at the moment and where they're at, that someone can slot in so seamlessly. And the same with Duncan Weir at 10 coming in and playing well there. It shows probably how good a kind of setup and a culture they have for someone to be able to do that as well.
And the I suppose that the focus moves pretty quickly to Sunday, doesn't it? Scotland-France, back at BT Murrayfield. France obviously didn't play their game last weekend against Fiji.
No.
As a result, the squad who were preparing to play against Fiji are going to play against Scotland. So that includes your DuPont, although Intermax injured, a lot of the players who were probably not going to be involved, because the French players can only play for three out of the six games due to an agreement with the professional teams over there. So it's full on France on Sunday. It's the next best test for Scotland to face one of the top teams in the world.
It is. And I heard Gregor speaking afterwards, and I was chatting to Johnny Gray last night and talking about the fact that there's bits to work on, you know, which is a good thing. You know, the first game of the tournament, the last thing, well, I'm telling you, you're taking the positives from the fact that they were challenged in different ways, but that's definitely a positive. You know, Italy were good and Scotland still managed to turn it around. France will be a completely different entity. I wonder whether France come with that result back in, what was it, March, in the back of their mind, or whether you know, so much water under the bridge and all sorts of things in the world makes him forget about that a little bit. But if that had been in England coming up on the back of a defeat the year before, or even 6-7 months before, there would be an extra bit to it. But the other thing is, maybe give Scotland the confidence you need to go in and play the same way.
Now, Rach, you have to boost, don't you, to get
away
indeed.
To a meeting.
So,
yes.
What do you reckon will happen at Murrayfield then? Can we do it?
I think we can do it. I think this is probably exactly what we need. Like, we played against, I guess, a full-strength French team back in March or whenever it was, and put in one of the best performances this year. So, I reckon, you know, with the momentum we've got with coming off the back of Italy and a few good games, I really think we can take it to them and hopefully at least put on a great performance and hopefully get a result as well.
What do I think? I think that the form team in the world at the moment are probably France. Mm-hmm. But I think that's brilliant. I think, it's just a remake-up, a rejig of what an autumn series would normally look like. It's a team that we know well, but it's a great test match. It'll be a brilliant test match, and it will push Scotland as much as it's been pushed. Like, the game last year was a great result. There was a red card involved in that game.
Just before half time, wasn't it?
Yeah, so who knows? But you can only beat what's in front of you. But I just think the Scotland players are in a good place. There's a good bit of momentum, a good feeling amongst them. I think that for all the downsides of what's happening, the fact that they are kind of locked in that bubble, it's given them so much time together. They seem to be using it very well.
The thing with France is, as well, I mean, we've often said this, and sometimes you get accused of kind of being lazy in terms of assessment or kind of analysis of France, but they give you opportunities. They do give you chances. Do you know? They can produce brilliance. We know that, especially with the players they've got at the moment, especially with the mindset they've got at the moment, built off the back of a more disciplined defence. But they do give you opportunities. There'll be space in the front field because they'll potentially leave players back to counter-attack to get them into the game. They kick a lot. Now, a lot of their kicks, they kick more than anyone else in the Six Nations, and a lot of those kicks were attacking kicks. So if they're slightly off, if it's a chip or a grubber that's too long and you've got, you know, Hoggy or Blair or Doohan or Darcy running on to that, there will be opportunities, won't there?
They will be, and we'll probably come on and talk a little bit about the Leinster game, Edinburgh Leinster game, but the comparisons are there, and for me, to beat somebody like France or Leinster at a club level, we need to start really well. We need to knock them off. They can't just play into the game the way they want to play into the game because they're exceptionally good at it. You know, if they're able to control the game, then they won't worry about scoring a try going against them because they'll just carry on and carry on. You've got to use some sort of different tactics to try and knock them off their stride early doors. That can be physicality at times. It can be just kicking smarter, pushing them back, making them play out. You've got to be careful when you do that against the French. You kick well, clearly. In the past, they would have come and there would have been a set-piece dominance as well. I don't expect that to come. I think Scotland's set-piece is standing up really, really well. So therefore, it becomes more about the slightly less structured play and being able to make sure that defence is as good as it needs to be.
Which I mean, Scotland are comfortable in those areas as well. It's a well-balanced, well-organised team that are picking up wins in different ways. So we look forward to Sunday. Sunday afternoon, the other Autumn Nations caps are before it, so we'll get an idea of where we stand on Sunday evening. Look forward to it. But you did mention the game Edinburgh Leinster. Glasgow didn't play at the weekend, obviously due to the Dragons being shut down for a fortnight, quarantine reasons. So it gave Glasgow a weekend to train, to upskill, to, you know, work with a lot of kind of newer players ahead of them playing Munster next Monday. But Edinburgh went down heavily away in the RDS last night. There's no shame in losing in Leinster against, you know, we know how powerful Leinster are, but it's a big defeat. Edinburgh are missing 21 players, but it's still a big defeat for Edinburgh to suffer on the road.
It was a tough defeat. It was one where That's exactly as I say about France. Leinster just controlled it. They looked comfortable. They were so clinical when they get into the opposition 22. And then the opposite's true when you get into their 22. They are cutthroat, difficult to try and score against. They're flying high. It wasn't a dissimilar game to what they did to Glasgow just a week before. But from an Edinburgh point of view, it's a tough one as far as, you know, the size of the defeat. A lot of young guys out there. I thought Miller at 8 stood up.
Ali was great.
He stood up and he went forward and he carried the ball and
dynamism as well.
Yeah.
Dynamism, speed.
Mm-hmm. He looked dangerous when carrying the ball back from the backfield, but he put his body in the line as well. And you know, they looked like tough conditions, but I mean, Richard Cockle were disappointed that, you know, Leinster played those conditions better. And they talk about attacking kicks. Some of their attacking kick play was utterly brilliant. And
especially when
Edinburgh players to cover it.
Well, especially when Sow was in the bin.
Yeah.
Do you know that it's we used to have this debate about what's the hardest position to cover if you get somebody putting us in bin. And everybody who plays a certain position will argue it's their position. But covering the field in the backfield without one of your back three is really difficult, because if you fly up, say if Jack Blaine comes up and plays a bit flatter or he defends in the front line, then all that space is exposed behind you. You know, there's ways of mitigating it, obviously, but it's really difficult to cover, especially multi-phase. The backfield in Leinster picked up really well with Byrne at 10. I thought Luke McGrath at 9 was outstanding. Levy got man of the play of the match because he was, you know, he's a quality player just back from injury. But I thought that the real star of the show for me wasn't even Kelleher that got a hat-trick. It was McGrath at 9 who really controlled it, and he run the ship.
He was dangerous every time he got the ball. I agree with you completely. He was outstanding. I think the other part of it for me is that I actually thought for spells, especially the beginning of the first half, Edinburgh forced Leinster into a few mistakes.
Yeah.
Like breakdown errors, a discipline. Leinster's discipline was dreadful for the first 15-20 minutes of the game. They were on the wrong side of the penalty count, not understanding what the referee was looking for them at the breakdown. They evolved their game and they changed and they got that. But there was knock-ons. There was other things you just don't expect from Leinster. That's what you need to do to Leinster. You need to force them into making these mistakes. But the quality of the team meant that they could bounce back from that. And it was a proper stranglehold they had in that game.
And they've done that to everyone so far. They've played, you know, I think it's 6 games, 5 points in each game, bonus point victory every game they've played. They've still got, you know, yes, they're blood and youngsters as well, but see Levy coming back, Luke McGrath, test 9, really, who should be in the Irish squad. You know, Devon Toner, your old mucker, he must be 250 games or whatever, plus all however many test matches for Ireland. So they've got the I suppose the quality and the experience around the young players as well. Well, I agree with you. Scotland, Edinburgh blood and young players and Glasgow blood and young players at this period is necessity, but it's actually going to be a positive in the long term as well for Ali Miller, who's not a particularly young player, but he hasn't played a huge amount of 15s. Great off the bat of scrum. Luke Crosby always delivers and fronts up. Yes, he might make mistakes, but the bravery and the courage there. You've got Dan Gamble coming on at tight head when the game's, you know, really going against Edinburgh and digging in and really fighting hard and at a tight head at scrum at such a young age. Nathan Chamberlain's learning at 10. Jack Blaine's playing 4 or 5 games in the bounce in the position. And it's difficult as a young player to do that, but you've just got to expose and you've got to get on with it.
And I think, you know, like I remember going over there, Moshi, as I was getting on about, and it was RDS and we took a heavy defeat. And I remember Shane Monroe using it as a real catalyst to, you know, to stick the boot in and talk about what needs to get better. Now, Edinburgh and Glasgow, they don't have anywhere to go at the moment. There's nobody else coming in from behind. Mm-hmm. There's unlikely to be anybody else coming down who's in need to protect the players on the national team. It's an absolute melting pot. But the only thing that will happen is that they will
get better
for it. Mm-hmm. And there will be pain. There will undoubtedly be pain. Anybody from in that Edinburgh jersey last night, or, you know, they'll be hurting about the size of that defeat. But there's somebody in there, Richard Cockrell, yes, other Henry Purgos, other senior players in there need to grab that and make sure that pain is used to be in the right way to be a catalyst for moving forward. I saw the 1872 fixtures getting announced, the next Guinness Pro 14 set of games, and you know, I think they take on more importance in seasons where neither team are doing all that well. I generally believe they can be big momentum shifters for both teams as far as moving them forward, as far as saying, right, line in the sand, we've learned the lessons from what's gone and push forward. There's a lot of rugby to be played before those games get played, but I think there's an opportunity there as well. Another announcement that went out this week, Mossy, which was disappointing but probably not unexpected, was the cancellation of all competitions for clubs and schools. No competitive rugby to be played until season 21-22. Like, I think, well, from our point of view, we've talked about it before, really difficult for the clubs, really difficult for the players involved in those clubs as well.
It's just so disappointing, isn't it? But it's, you know, it's, as you said it there, it's not a massive surprise. It's just a byproduct of the moment we're in, really. We have to think about safety. We have to think about, you know, adhering to the restrictions. And it's so difficult for everybody at the moment. I suppose what you have to then do for in terms of clubs and schools is when it is safe, just really keep that thirst and love and drive for rugby and competitive rugby, and you know, be that the goal. You know, try and nobody knows when it's going to come along, but we need to keep engagement with the sport. We have to be inspired by the rugby that is allowed to be played, and make a connection with the national team, the professional teams, and that connection with individuals, because we've got to believe and hope that we'll get back to competitive rugby at all levels. And when it does come along, then you know that there's a buzz, there's an excitement for it. It's just so difficult for everybody, for clubs especially, and at the moment to see that, I suppose, light at the end of the tunnel. But I suppose it's a responsibility on the teams who are playing to drive that inspiration. And to keep in contact, and let's, you know, build towards getting back to competitive rugby when it's safe.
Absolutely. And I think, you know, they do that, all teams do that on the park as well. The national team, Glasgow and Edinburgh, continue to play their games and inspire everybody involved in rugby through their performances, but off the field as well. I don't know if you saw the BT Keeping You Connected pieces that were coming out of the camp. Jamie Ritchie in particular taken aback as he went on to a call faced by somebody sitting in a Glasgow Warriors strip, actually tickled me. But you know, brilliant the guys are doing that. That's driven from the players, driven from within the camp, that they're keen to have those conversations in areas that there's no ability to go out and sign autographs after a game at the moment, so you've got to be doing these.
Yeah, and it's the same the world over, it's the same the country over. You know, all the unions will have to make tough decisions, of course we will, but I just know that as soon as we're able to, and legally able to, and safely able to, we get back to, you know, filling the playing fields, filling the school pitches with that buzz, excitement, determination and drive that you see from the national team when they play in the BT Manorfield to wherever your pitch is and whichever part of the country. And we've got to believe that that'll come back, it will come back. And just think about how excited it'll be when you can clean your boots. Remember, you used to get a fine at school if your boots weren't clean. I wonder if that still happens. Get the polish in the boots, get them sparkling clean, get out and take on the opposition and shake hands at the end. It's what we want to get back to, and we will at some point.
We undoubtedly will. Is it going to inspire you maybe after to get your boots back on? I mean, is it going to go that far? Or?
My boots have never been off, Al.
That's true, aye. Coaching boots.
But no. maybe I gave me a touch rugby in the local area. You never know. But it's and that's the thing. I mean, the local community then becomes really, really important. My wee boy still goes to his rugby at the moment on the Sundays, and it's brilliant to see them. He's only seven, but it's great to see the work that goes on, that, you know, allowing the kind of young ones still to get a run about.
Well, we're joined straight from the camp now for Ali Price. Great to have you along, Ali, for a chat. Before we look ahead to France, just we've had a bit of discussion and debriefed, if you like, the Italian game, which we thought was an excellent victory. but had to be kind of battled out a little bit. In the first half, we thought Italy played particularly well, put you guys under a little bit of pressure, but we were just so impressed with the composure and the balance to your game, not only the second half, towards the end of the first half and the second half that got the victory. What take us kind of on the field, was there a panic, or was it as calm as it looked and we just got the bits and pieces right towards the end of the first half and kicked on in the second?
It always felt like we were able to manage the game. We always felt in control, especially on the field. Like you said, first half, I thought Italy played well, and our discipline wasn't great, which didn't help. That sort of let them build a score, and we got ourselves back in it with Duan's try, and again their try was pretty good as well, which took them back in front. So the first half, I think, give all the credit to Italy. They played well, but we never panicked. We did feel like it was a game that we were in control of, and I think, like you said, come sort of 60 minutes, that's when we started to find a bit of momentum in attack, and I think majority of that second half was then played in sort of the Italian 22, the Italian sort of 40 metres in, and managed to come away with points from that, which sort of made the last sort of 5-10 minutes a bit more comfortable than perhaps the start of the game was.
Did you see Duhan coming for that try? He obviously gave the pass, but as a filthy angle, as I say, did you see him? Did you hear him? Or did you just know he was hitting it?
The rock before, I'd seen that he'd come in off his wing, and then, but when I picked it up, I didn't realise he was going to come. I didn't realise he was coming at that speed, and I kind of double pumped it and was like, right, I better shift this pretty quickly.
Obviously, like a really convincing performance out of that first game, and I guess now looking forward to France at the weekend, who'll pose a different threat as well. What are you guys obviously taking from the game in terms of positives, but what are areas you want to work on, improve on going into that France game?
I think firstly, discipline's massive, as it always is, but I think we can take confidence from how our defence is going at the moment. You know, the energy we get from our defensive sets really, I feel like it's sort of leading our whole game at the moment. And with this French side that's coming, they're full of confidence. They're playing some brilliant rugby. You know, our defence has to be on top of that. And in return, you know, off the back of turnovers or pressure that we force on them, that's where we can capitalise, I think.
The discipline, I think, has been good, though. There was only, what, 6 penalties in the whole game, I think, against Wales. I was kind of around the 10, I think, against Italy. So it wasn't quite as good against Italy. But I wouldn't say that's like bad discipline. It was just maybe speed to break down. Little things that you can control rather than looking to solve big problems. Would you agree?
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, and maybe not, again, we've not been bad for it recently, but just compounding penalties. So, you know, if we're in a good position and we happen to give away a penalty, and then from a resulting line out or whatever, we then go again, and then before you know it, we're in our own half again. So, yeah, like you said, it's not been terrible, but
That's a good point. That's a really good point, because most kind of assessment of discipline is the number of penalties you give away. But you're right, it's the frequency of them, isn't it? If you have 3 in a row, the impact that can have is massive. But if you have 3 spread over 40 minutes, then you're not compounding that. So that's a really important point. Is that something you would agree with, Rachel, as well?
Yeah, I was going to say, I think on the weekend, the commentators said late into the second half, you'd only had 2 in the second half, so you must have had close to 7-8.
It was about 8 in the first half. I think it
felt probably worse than the total count was.
Yeah.
I think in the second half, we didn't give away a penalty for 37 minutes, so it means that come the first half, it seemed like we were always giving away penalties. So probably, yeah, it
just kills your momentum as well, doesn't it? Like you think you're building, and then you give away a silly penalty and you're back in your own 22, and it can kill a game completely. But I guess like that's probably the difference between the first half and the second half, was they quite often pinned you a little bit in the first half, and then you had that in the second half for sure.
But good memories against France, obviously the last Six Nations March, wasn't it? And the last Six Nations home match was a victory. They effectively, that stopped their Grand Slam. They are a quality side. I would say they're probably playing even better now as they were then. So they will have a host of tricks up their sleeve, but you can take confidence from that defence. And I suppose when you play France, it's expecting the unexpected as well, isn't it? Like they'll have a physical edge, of course they will, but you have to be on point the whole time defensively, because they will challenge short sides, they'll chip kick, they'll a lot of kick attacks in their play. So you'll be ready for all that, I assume.
Yeah, absolutely. They hold the ball for the least amount of any of the Six Nations teams, and they actually kick the second most out of the Six Nations teams as well. So people think they play a lot, but they actually kick a lot as well, and they sort of live off that counter attack, broken field. That's where they're incredibly dangerous, as well as, you know, when they get into their flowing attack, they're pretty good as well. But, you know, so it's just managing that, keeping the pressure on them, putting the pressure on them, forcing them to play when it's maybe not on for them to play. And that's where we can come alive through our own turnovers or by gaining territory that way. But yeah, look, they've got brilliant players across the field, which, you know, it's a massive challenge. And like you said, I think they are in a better spot now than what they were in the Six Nations. But we are the last team that beat them, so we've got to take confidence from that. And you know, we all know it's doable.
Yeah, and I think, like you say, like taking confidence from that last performance, but I guess looking back at that last performance when you did play them, what were the things that you think kind of saw you come out with a win in that game?
I think the energy and the intensity we brought that day was incredible. Obviously, we could feed a lot off of the crowd and the support, which is massive at a home game. But the way we just were relentless in our line speed, our time in the tackle, our collisions. And we scored some pretty good tries that day as well, in turn, you know, when we got into their half, the flow of our attack was really good. And yeah, I think we were able to just smother them, I guess. That was another game that we felt on top of them the whole match. We felt in control, and me and Adam came off the pitch that day, both saying that was probably the game in my career anyway that I felt most in control of, in terms of where we played it, how we managed it. I think from everything we'd watched from their games previous, it kind of was nice to put it onto the field and see the result. Yeah, it was. I thought that game was very controlled, like a controlled performance by all of us.
And for you, playing well, enjoying, as always, you always enjoy your rugby. A big old smile on your face, running around, be it Glasgow or Scotland. But a brilliant opportunity and challenge this week to face, arguably, the best nine in the world in Antoine Dupont. I know you've played against him often, but he's a special player. When you play against a player like that, do you think, right, here we go, I'm going to outplay you? Or is there a bit of, well, I can learn from him? Or is there an extra bit of, I don't know, awareness because he is so sharp? Or is it just, I'm going to show you? What's your mindset? Or do you not think about it? It's come half a position where you can get a bit kind of one-on-one, head-to-head with your opposite number, front rows the same, possibly. Yeah, I'm not a fullback, but for you, is it a real challenge? Or is it I'll shake your hand at the end and we'll see how we get on?
Yeah, he's playing incredibly well at the moment. There's an awareness of how dangerous he can be. For me, it goes back to when Sammy Hidalgo was at Edinburgh. and we were both kind of coming into the national team and the setup, and he was against me in one of the 1872 Cup games, and I kind of got dragged into the whole
battle head to head.
Yeah, battle against my opposite number, and
it you won't be the first in an 1872 Cup game. Honestly, you won't be the first. You won't be the last either.
And it kind of took me away from my job and thinking about what my job was. And so from, like, I learned a lot from that. I played against guys that obviously you have rivalries with, or you think are playing well, and all the rest of it. But I think after that moment, you know, no matter who's opposite me, I've still got my own job to do. It doesn't, you know, I'm going to try and go through with my role as best I can. You know, if I get dragged into trying to chase an opposition nine around the field or trying to, you know, put him off in some way, then I feel I'm taken away from my own job and what I can add to my team, which is more important. So, yeah, that was a few years ago now, but since then, that's been kind of my thought process.
That's dangerously mature, Ali.
That's it. I'm 27 now. I'm getting old.
Obviously, as well, just like away from games and whatever else, you guys are in a bit of a bubble at the moment, like we talked about before we started. So, how is the vibe in camp? Obviously, you can't really leave the hotel and all that. We talked about it a little bit. How are the boys feeling kind of living in that bubble and going game to game?
It's good, to be fair. Winning always helps with sort of the team spirit. I think you realise we're in a very lucky position and privileged position with what we're in. You know, we're able to be far more sociable than you would be at home, in terms of mixing with each other, and you know, we're in here, all our mates, you know, and this is the world we live in at the moment. It's kind of not possible to go into town or go for coffees elsewhere, but stuff's being put on for us. We get coffees in, and you know, dartboards, table tennis, food trucks come in like once a week or whatever, just to mix up the food and all the rest of it. Yeah, finding other ways. I'd not played chess since I was about 10 years old, and now we're all avid chess fans. So chess is big at the moment.
Please tell me it's still with a chessboard and chess pieces. It's no online or anything like that in your rooms, is it?
Oh, no, there's about 4 or 5 chessboards floating around.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Yeah, there's no virtual chess being played here. It's only one sit down and table.
That's much more sociable than sitting in front of your PlayStations or Xboxes, to be fair.
Rachel, there's still plenty. There's plenty of PlayStation getting played.
I think that's the difference between men's camp and women's camp. We never play PlayStation. We sit and chat.
Yeah. Come 8, 9 o'clock, Warzone gets loaded up in a lot of rooms, I think. Headsets on.
So do you all bring your own ones with you? And
yeah.
That is dedication, that is.
Ali, a few changes as well across the squad of 23 for the game on Sunday. Again, underlining, we say it every week on this platform, but the depth that Scotland national team are able to build, there's quality players, you know, being left out through your rotation and 6 games in 7 weeks, but there's also quality players coming into the squad with a few changes across that squad. I assume the structures and the strategies will be fairly similar, and these players just seamlessly come in and try and take their opportunities.
Yeah, that's it. A lot of games in a short period of time, so boys are going to get opportunities, and the guys coming in are full of experience as well, which will add to the side. And yeah, like, everyone's been around the squad now for a number of weeks. Guys have been in the squad for a while and know the system, know the shape, and yeah, it's just about getting an opportunity and taking it.
Matt Fagerson comes in at 8 as well, so somebody you know well for the club, but that has a direct effect on kind of you, the 8-9 axis. But you know Matt well, and it's great to see him back after limping off against Georgia. We kind of thought it was maybe worse than it was, but it'd be good to get a club mate back in the back of the scrum.
Yeah, and he had a brilliant start to the season when we got back from lockdown, full of energy at 8, carries hard. A very dynamic player. Good to have him back in.
And I suppose the other any headline one is Duncan Taylor, another guy returning from an injury, but he starts on the bench, and someone like Dunkey, he can he fit into any system, and his attack's excellent, his kicking game's excellent, his defence is outstanding. You just desperately want him to have a run free of injuries, because he's a big personality in the squad, and he can take a big impact in the field as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, brilliant in attack and defence. Also, I think he's a very controlled player. Doesn't get flustered, as we all know, spaceman.
the spacey.
spaceman. Look, it's great to have him back. He's had, what, 2 or 3 years now where he's not quite been able to get a run through injury, and look, he's back fit and he's been back training well. So it's good to have him back in the side.
He's as cheery as ever, isn't he? Lucho Ali. He has a player that plays with a smile on his face. I actually saw him last week in the Italian game, and it looked as if he'd been kind of tackled high, and he had an Italian kind of handoff up around his neck area as he was wrestling the ball, and he was actually smiling at the referee, claiming for a high tackle. I was like, even when you're claiming a high tackle, there's a smile on your face. But he's playing well, and he's an important cog in how the tempo and the control that Scotland are developing.
Yeah, definitely. And like, you can tell he's enjoying himself, like you say, and that often does come from, first of all, playing well. And he looks so confident and so composed, and you know, he's laughing about being 27 and getting on a bit, but he is still really young. And like, the fact that he plays with so much composure and maturity is incredible. But he's kind of so central to what Scotland are trying to do at the moment and the way they want to play. So it's brilliant that he is playing so well.
And there's loads of competition at 9, well, most positions, yeah, but especially at 9. So he knows with George Horn, Sam Adagoclin in the squad, Scott Steele's in the squad as well. There's you kind of have to always perform, and he's certainly doing that. But and we see that we spoke about it there a little bit with Ali, just the depth of the squad and the changes this week. So it is an opportunity for the players who are coming in, but there are a few changes. I think that's the right thing to do with so many internationals in such a short period of time. Would you agree?
Yeah, definitely. And I think the worst thing you can do in a tournament like this is let your players become like mentally fatigued as well. So keeping that fresh and giving players a rest early on, rather than kind of seeing them through till they're really kind of spent and then giving them that rest, is probably a really clever move. And like you say, the depth of this, like the standard of the players that are actually coming in is brilliant. So it's really exciting to see that level of depth. And I think as well, the fact that they have been living in this bubble and had this really concentrated time together they've probably not had previously, usually with maybe a week's prep going into an international, like it makes it probably a lot more seamless having players just slot in and have those rotations, which is really cool. I think it'll be a really exciting game, and I think the team is actually a really exciting team and a team who will look to play as well. So no, it should be good.
I think it's a game of the weekend. I think England play Ireland, don't they? Wales play Georgia. Unfortunately, the Italy-Fiji game's not going to be able to get played. But I think regardless of the other games, I think this game, the way France are playing, the qualities that they bring, I just think it'll be the game of the weekend. Hopefully, I think it'll be a reasonable day as well. So we'll hopefully see a bit of spark in rugby. You know you're going to get that from France at some point. You know you're going to get mistakes. You know you're going to get opportunities from France. And I think from our point of view, you've mentioned it a couple of times, control's the key word.
Yeah.
And it was good to hear Ali be pretty mature about his kind of head-to-head with who I think at the moment would be the best scrum half in the world, and Antoine Dupont. He's like, it's a real insight into Scotland's mindset, really, that, listen, let France do what they're going to do. We will build our defence and we'll stop it and we'll play our game. Maybe in the past, we would try to or try to attack too often or from too deep. But seems to be that the balance is there, and you know opportunities will come against France.
Yeah, definitely. And I think defence is going to be massive for Scotland. And like Ali says, it's going so well. So if we can hold them out and you know, kind of dampen their pressure and their momentum and just wait for our chance to snipe and when they make their mistakes, that'll be vital. So, yeah, I think, you know, you've got two teams there who are going to look to play and look to use loads of different options and different styles of play throughout the game. It will hopefully be a really exciting one.
Well, thanks once again to Ali. We'll let him on back to his chess, I'd imagine, before a food truck comes in, and then he can settle down to his online gaming later on. All good preparation for the weekend. The game's Sunday, obviously. So they'll do their team prep on Saturday, and then we look forward to watching everybody at 3 o'clock on Sunday afternoon.
Support Scotland this season as one. Scottish Rugby has introduced a new membership for fans at home and abroad to back the sport in Scotland during the COVID-19 pandemic. Sign up for Scotland now at scottishrugby.org.
Thanks again for listening to the official Scottish Rugby podcast. We will be back again next week to debrief the France game of the weekend.